What's going on, Just Goes to Show listeners? It's your co-host Ridge. We're back with another episode.
Yep, welcome back, Ridge, and always excited to be here. A little bit of a break for the Premier League this week with the international break, so it's nice to kind of get a check-in here on what's been happening over the past month or so and looking ahead towards the home stretch of the season.
Yeah, I was thinking about it this weekend. I'm definitely hurting not having games with the international break, but I'm just thinking about, I'm always itching for games in the summer, like Premier League. I'm like, oh, I miss Saturdays. Then the season comes, and obviously the season's pretty long, and there are some Saturdays where it's like I almost take it for granted how good the fixtures are. And this past week, I watched all the games, and it wasn't a great game week because of all the FA Cup action. So it wasn't a great game week for Premier League. And then we have the international break. So it's a bit of a pause here, sort of like mini break before we really kick on into the last 9 game weeks of the season. Plus, you'll see European football and all the cup finals. So probably the most exciting time of Premier League football lies between now and mid-May.
It does, yeah, but you're right. It's been a bit of a lull. A lot of the teams are going to have basically a 3-week break between matches, which is pretty crazy. Obviously, there's FA Cup in between. There's international breaks. Some teams are playing European football, so the rest is nice. And the top teams, a lot of the guys aren't getting rest. We've seen a couple of guys, Holland and Saka, pick up knocks while on international duty. So it's one of those weird dilemmas where it's a break for us, but a lot of the players are still training and injury risks are still real. So, the player never really rests for the players, but for us, it's a downtime. Luckily, in the States, we got March Madness to give us something to do on the weekend. I don't know about you down in Miami, but we got probably about 3 or 4 inches of snow this morning in Michigan, which was unexpected. So it would have been a really nice weekend to sit inside and watch some Prem, but alas, we will chat about it and prepare ourselves for the following weekend.
There we are. Yeah, I got a little bit of rain today a lot of rain today in Miami. It like torrentially downpours down here when it starts raining, like absurd amounts of rain. Hurricanes, all that stuff is real. I haven't had one yet, but fingers crossed. All right, so what we're going to cover today, gang, on the pod, we're going to look at the top end of the table for the title run-in for the last 9 weeks of the season. And then if you're a fan of a smaller team in the Premier League, quote-unquote smaller team, but a team not at the top of the table, we're going to look right at the bottom of the table as well and talk about the relegation run-in and some of the recent financial fair play and sustainability regulations and punishments that have been dished out. We're going to check in on Fantasy Premier League because we play and there's some announcements there. And then I think, Chris, you're delivering trivia to me. And then we're going to look ahead to the end of March fixtures on the upcoming slate. So, Chris, let's start with the top end of the table. Obviously, the teams that are talked about a lot. We got fresh takes here on Just Goes to Show Pod. So, thinking about the teams at the top of the table, I know we've got here, like, what makes the best story? Win the league? Or what do you think?
Let's flip that around first, I think. Let's do a little bit of table setting, and then we can do a little more discussion after. So, right now, the table, we currently have Arsenal first, Liverpool second, City third. And I was looking up the live odds. So these are courtesy of FanDuel for futures to win the Premier League. Because this is really I know last year there was a little bit of drama around this time, I would say, with City and Arsenal. And then City kind of coasted through the last few matches when they won last season. This season we really have a true three-horse race, it feels like. So as of right now, the odds are Man City to win the title plus 110. So close to even odds there. They are at 63 points with the worst goal differential, plus 35. Liverpool's second best odds, plus 220. 1 point ahead on 64 points with a slightly better goal differential, plus 39. Arsenal, the third best odds at plus 240, very close to Liverpool. Same amount of points, 64 points. Best goal differential at plus 46. So in the table, it's Arsenal 1, Liverpool 2, City 3. As far as bookmakers are concerned, flip that around in terms of who's most likely to win the Premier League. I think that's probably fair, the odds. I think I would probably go something similar in that order.
It's so interesting though, like the algo, like creating those odds, because yeah, like you said, it's just flipped upside down, right? Like you objectively on paper, you'd be like, okay, Arsenal should go and win the title, most points, best goal differential, right? But there's definitely some, you wonder, I don't know, like algorithmically when they make these odds, like you wonder, is there like historical, you know, what kind of bias is in there? Like how much is Arsenal's collapse last season playing into them being the lowest odds despite top of the table, you know?
Well, I think if you're looking at it from the gambling perspective, because I think it's an interesting question, the way that they're setting these odds are to maximize their profits, right? The bookmakers. So rather than necessarily like historical data or I think like future schedule obviously comes into play. But what they're really doing is trying to hedge these odds so they can make the most money. And so the reason why City have the best odds is because they expect the most action to be placed on Man City, right? They're the most likely team in their eyes for people to be betting on, and then Liverpool and then Arsenal. So it comes down to, if City win the title, we have to price these odds in a way that we're not going to lose money. And because of that, they have to make the odds less favorable, because if they put the odds of City winning the title at a similar number to Liverpool and Arsenal, there would be too much action on that bet. Too many people would be picking Man City, and then they would be very exposed if Man City wins. So I think they're looking at it from a perspective of what's the public perception, right? And what do the masses feel is most likely here, rather than what might actually be the most likely outcome.
Whoa. I think you may have just blown my mind when thinking about like odds and gambling odds. I've literally only ever thought about it through one lens, which is like, these are the odds that this is the outcome. But you just introduced a whole nother variable, which is here, like before, these are the odds for the most likely outcomes. Here's our self-interest around setting these odds before what we view as the most likely outcomes.
Yeah, like for example, if they started the odds, let's say after the last fixtures ended, they started Man City's odds at plus 150 to win, and then a lot of money comes in on Man City, they're going to decrease those odds more and more and more, get it closer to even, so that way they don't have a million people betting on Man City plus 150 and 100,000 people betting on Liverpool plus 200, right? They need to like even out these teams so that way they can try to like distribute the bets, so no matter who wins, they can come out with positive from like a financial perspective.
Holy shit. This is why I don't gamble. I'm just a bad gambler, because I can't win. Yeah, like this just, that had never occurred to me, honestly. And I feel stupid saying that out loud, because it seems pretty simple now that I know this information, but that had never occurred to me.
Now, all that being said, if I were making the odds, I mean, this is how I would order it, right? I think you probably would too. Whether or not you think City will win, I think they probably are the most likely, just given the circumstances. They look at their squad, and I think the historical precedent is relevant, because they have a lot of players that have a lot of experience playing in big matches. They've won all these titles under Pep already, which I think does add to their likelihood of winning. So I wouldn't really make any changes to this, but that's just more of a kind of background on how these odds are set up. And I mean, obviously, I don't work for DraftKings or whatever, but that's the general idea of how they're doing these types of things.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, on the back of that, Chris, who do you think is going to win? I mean, I know we've had this discussion a few different times, but just quickly to quip in, like I've said this a few times, so just doubling down for any new listeners. Like I've said for a while now, probably since around Christmas, that, or since Klopp announced that he's done, that I think Liverpool is going to win the title. I think they have the advantage of a non-relevant European conquest, and that's a huge differentiator with Arsenal and City, who have both advanced to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So City and Arsenal are both competing on that front, and Liverpool isn't. And so you've got Klopp out, Liverpool only focused on that front. They also just got bounced by Manchester United in the FA Cup. Like, I just think Liverpool's going to win, just because I think they're going to go all in on every Premier League game. Every one of those is going to be cup final. And I don't think City's going to be able to win in the Champions League and win domestically with a Liverpool team that is better than they were last season.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the City train, and I still think if you made me pick one team, I would still pick Man City, but Liverpool is growing each and every week for me. The big thing that is like recency bias here that makes me think Liverpool have a really good chance. They just played Man City in their last match, 1-1 draw. They were at home, but this is the lineup that Liverpool put out. Kelleher in net for an injured Alisson. Their defenders were Joe Gomez, Virgil van Dijk, Jarrell Kwanzaa, and Connor Bradley. They started Endo, Szoboszlai, and McAllister in the midfield, so pretty standard there. And then no Salah up top or Diogo Jota, so it was Luis Diaz, Darwin Nunez, Harvey Elliott against basically a full-strength Man City team. And they were very much up for the task in that game and drew 1-1. And when those lineups got announced, I'm looking at that and I'm saying there's no way in hell that Liverpool can win this game. And they didn't win, but to get a draw was very, very big. I don't know. I mean, they don't have the depth that Man City does, but credit to Jurgen Klopp. They've done a really good job of handling injuries. You'd think Salah should be back to 100%. Trent's been knocked up a little bit, but he should be back. Robertson came on as a sub that match. Jota, I don't know when he's going to be back, but I don't think in the near future. So I don't know. I still lean City. I do think Liverpool have a chance. I don't want to completely count out Arsenal either. I mean, I do think they have a very good squad. I think they're, in terms of their like back four, I think it might be the most stable out of all these teams. They, like Gabriel and Saliba, I saw were the partnership that have started the most games together at center back this season. And they've won like 72% of the games they've started in. I think it was 24 times they've played together. There's a lot of stability there. That I think is really valuable. Liverpool have had a ton of different combinations at the back. City, that just because of like the nature of Pep, changes that up a lot. And you're right. Nature, I mean,
the nature of Pep.
The nature of Pep. That could be a good name for a documentary or something. Right. Maybe like a biography about his life. But I do think you're right. You know, Arsenal and City are going to have some really big European fixtures coming up that Liverpool might not have to. I mean, they're still going to be like dealing with these injuries and lack of squad depth, I think. But I think they're going to be a little bit less focused on other competitions than these other teams. Although, I don't know if you saw all the buzz about their potential quadruple before they lost in the FA Cup. And I don't know, I wouldn't qualify it necessarily as a quadruple if they're going to win the Europa League versus the Champions League. But people were talking about that, about how they're... quadruple chances were squashed after losing the FA Cup to United. But yeah, I mean, City's also still in the FA Cup. They're in the Champions League. You expect them to advance far in the Champions League. So that's something to keep in mind, definitely.
Yeah, and I think if you're a Liverpool fan, you trade in all of that. Like, you trade in right now, hey, we're going to get bounced in the League Cup. We're going to get bounced in the Europa League. And we just got bounced in the FA Cup. All of that just
well, they won the League Cup, but yeah.
They won the League Cup, but they just got bounced in the FA Cup. And then we get bounced in Europa League. Like, would we do that to win a Premier League title? They'd all say, of course, right? So,
yeah, definitely.
So, I don't know. I think, I do think they're, to me, in my eyes, that they're my favorites, but I do think this is one of the closest races we've had three team wise in a long, long time. I agree. I think Arsenal defensively look very, very strong. Raya has been a big addition to that back four, and then also the emergence of Kivior and Ben White's been stellar. The combination of Saliba and Gabriel has been really strong as well. It feels like they've kind of figured out how they like to play with kind of four big defenders, and they're so good off set pieces. They've got the most goals across set pieces. I think the only center back pairing with a higher win rate than Gabriel and Saliba is Ezri Konsa and Pau Torres. Shout out Villa.
Correct.
But yeah, I mean, Arsenal's no joke, right? So they sit last, and I think it really could fall anyway, is what I'm trying to say. Like, I could be talked into any team, and time will tell. But I do, you know, if you were to ask me, hey, like, odds wise, and who do I think is going to win? I'm just going to say Liverpool, and the biggest variable that's different, you know, outside of the usual, I don't know, you know, they're all good teams, is like they just don't have a European conquest that like they don't care about the Europa League. The team that the players will trot out, they'll trot out Dokes, McConnells, all these under 18s and Clarks and all that stuff. So I don't they don't care whether if they lose there. It's good experience, sure, but they don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think Arsenal would definitely be prioritizing the league as well.
Who would you bet on, Chris, right now, like with these odds?
I would probably take City at +110. I mean, I think to get them at plus odds is, I mean, I know they're in third, but I still think that they're definitely the most likely of the three. Like, I would put the chances at Man City winning the title at over 50% right now. Not by much, but by a little bit. So looking at it that way, that's who I would bet on probably. I'm not going to take any of these right now, but like I would rather see like one of these teams pull ahead of City a little bit and then let those odds get a little bit juicier before I would take a bet personally.
Yeah. So I guess on the take of what you would rather see. So that's what you would rather see from a gambling perspective. What would you rather see as a football fan? Would you rather see, you know, as an emotionally connected man with football, would you rather see City pop off and win another Prem, continue this outrageous dynasty level with the allegations of financial mismanagement in the background looming for next season? Would you rather see Klopp win in his final season before his replacement and leaving Liverpool, or would you rather see Arsenal kind of come through with Mikel Arteta and establish themselves on the main stage?
And I don't like any of those options. City is so boring at this point, and the financial issues are looming. And if the investigation comes out that they have all these major, major breaches, it's just going to put a stain on this entire era for them. Yeah. But that's such a boring thing at this time now, after they've won three in a row, they've won five out of the last 6 years. Like, God, it's like a broken record right now. I hate Arsenal and Arteta. Like, I really, really hate Arteta. So I don't want to see them win. I don't like Liverpool at all. I don't really hate Jurgen Klopp. I do think that would make the best story, Klopp winning in his final season. He's been a stalwart for that club. He's had an incredible run there. I think he's a good manager. I think he's done a lot with maybe less resources available to him than Man City. Definitely not as strong of a squad almost every year than Man City. So I think the pick there would be Klopp winning in his final season, but I don't really like any of the options. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know. What makes for the best story, or like what do I like? What I'd like actually is I would like to see Arsenal win, just because it's a new title winner, right? And it would definitely establish that for the next few years that there'll be a new team. So I think and they're the lowest odds. I feel like part of me wants to see them win out of the other teams, you know, or at least more than the other teams. Like City and Liverpool have won it recently, so it's nice to see someone new get theirs. So I think that's what I think. But looking at it all, I mean, they're all really dominant teams. I think my thing about City is I don't really want them to win because of what you just mentioned, all that kind of background noise. And this is probably a good segue into our relegation run-in, but with all the sustainability rules around football and the discussion around an independent regulator and the financial regulation, like City got in and pumped their investment in to make them a world superpower at the perfect time, right? Like before... like when we had financial fair play was a thing, yes, but like it was still relatively new and there were a lot of ways to cut corners. And so City, when the City Group came in, bought the club and sort of pumping money into the team, they really skirted a lot of these regulations that are now in place. And so now for the financial fair play rules, the sustainability rules are much stricter, and the ways to circumnavigate them are tracked and observed. And so City, it's kind of like, it's like buying a house when interest rates are low, and then now everyone that wants to buy a house now and interest rates are really high, right? Like you got in at the right time. And so City did get in at the right time and pump all their money in. It'll suck if It'll just be weird and funky. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. If they end up getting punished and titles stricken away and all that stuff. But I do think moving into the bottom of the table and some of the punishments that's been dished out, it's fascinating to think about, like, these teams like Newcastle, for example, who can't do what City did 15 years ago, you know? Like, Newcastle can't just rise to be the best team in the Premier League as quickly. And so that's a good transition, Chris, into the financial punishment dished out at the bottom end of the table, because we had some news around Forest this week.
Yeah, so Forest, 4-point deduction. We had talked about this, I think, back in January, maybe end of January, that they were likely to be punished. 4 points, Everton obviously had 6. I think the big difference from what I've read is that they were claiming that Everton were, like, a little bit deceptive with their numbers, like trying to sneak something past, whereas Forest kind of owned up to everything with their mistakes. I don't know how that translates to 2-point difference. Like, I don't really understand any of these punishments or how they decide them, because it seems like they did similar things. But it is really, really impactful because it drops Forest below Luton. They're now 18th in the table at 21 points, and in that relegation zone. And Luton, they're not really, like, racking up a lot of wins, but I do think they have a lot of momentum. I saw they've scored a goal in 17 straight matches, which is just unbelievable for a newly promoted team of their size. So they're on 22 points, Forest on 21. And then, just kind of given the whole scope of the relegation picture, there is still potential for Everton to receive an additional punishment this season. They're sitting on 25 points with a game in hand. So they have a little bit of cushion right now. But if they got docked another 4 points, they'd be level with Forest. So it does seem like it's going to be one of those three probably that goes down. Brentford is the other team that is flirting with that relegation spot. They have 26 points, and they've played 29. So, you know, Everton can jump them with their game in hand. So if Brentford don't get a couple of results, they could kind of sink back down into that bottom three. But I would say it's probably between Forest, Luton, and Everton right now. What do you think out of those teams? Who do you think is most likely to go down? Who would you like to see go down? And I guess, do you have any other, like, thoughts on how these breaches and penalties are getting factored in?
Yeah. So a couple questions in there. Firstly, like, I'm going to say what I've said sort of all season long, which is I think the three newly promoted teams are going to get sent back down, right? So that's Luton, Burnley, and Blades. The Nottingham Forest punishment is super, super interesting for a whole host of reasons. Like you said, they seems like the same violations of what happened at Everton. And what's very interesting is they're sort of they were very transparent in terms of their financial reporting, that they knew that they were past all the regulations. But what they're arguing are sort of two things. They're arguing, firstly, that they were promoted in a unique circumstance. So, like, basically, like, they rose too quickly. Like, they weren't expecting to go up into the Premier League. They had a crazy run under Steve Cooper. They got into the playoff. They weren't expecting it. They were, like, mid-table around Christmas, or, like, bottom half of the table around Christmas. They won a bunch of games, got into the championship playoff, won the championship playoff, and got promoted. And they weren't – the ownership, basically what they said is, we didn't think that was going to happen. And so financially, they joined the Premier League, and then they said that their argument is, like, they had to spend a bunch of money to be competitive in the division, and therefore infrastructurally, like, they're sort of saying, like, what was the alternative? Like, we just don't spend the money and we get fucked. Like, we just roll over and admit that we're going to lose in the Prem. Like, they're saying we had to do this because we got promoted quicker than we thought, and our revenues weren't scaling at that same pace, which is sort of an interesting way to think about it. And an interesting argument to be made. And then
lame argument. We can dive into that a little bit. Before we move on to your second point, keep it in mind. That's such a cop-out to be like, we grew too fast, we were too successful, and we didn't know how to handle it, so we had to cheat to keep up. Sorry. There was nothing we could do except cheat.
Yep, that's exactly what they're saying, basically. There's nothing
argument. Like, we're not going to defend our actions. There was no other way. Like, imagine using that excuse in any other, like, instance in your life. Right. Like in any situation being like,
yeah,
I'm sorry, we were more successful than we thought and we weren't ready for it. And rather than trying to figure it out, we just felt like the only way to keep up with what we were doing was to just cheat and manipulate the rules and, don't punish us too hard. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah,
that's really lame.
It's sort of like thinking like, hey, I got called up to the majors at 17 years old. I wasn't expecting to get called up or prepared to get called up this early. So I had to take steroids to like stay.
Yeah, exactly.
As a major leaguer, right?
I had no other choice. My body wasn't big enough yet.
Right, right. And I agree. I think it's loser logic. And with that appeal, like if they win that appeal on that grounds, because the Greek owner keeps saying that they're going to keep fighting it. If they win an appeal on those grounds, it's like, okay, that totally undermines the whole rules in the first place, right? Like,
yeah, and I think there are issues with the rules, but that's kind of beside the point. They still broke them. The rules, right. I think, need to be adjusted, but in the meantime, you have to play by them. So right. Anyway, go on to your second point. I just wanted to kind of touch on that because I think that's a ridiculous sentiment there, but go ahead.
And the second thing that they're arguing is specifically around the Brennan Johnson sale and the reporting of his sale. So basically long story short, they said that they got a bid from Brentford for, I think it was like 30 million pounds. And ended up selling him to Spurs in the January window later for...
No, it was they sold him in the summer. They sold him in the summer, but basically I read about this.
Yeah, previously.
They sold him in August, right before the deadline they sold him. But they could have sold him, they even said like a couple of months earlier, right before, like it was not even in the January window. It was still would have been over the summer technically, but they were arguing that they could have sold him a couple of months earlier. For less money, but they wanted to hold out to get more money, and they would have been able to sell him before that financial period ended, which was, I think was like June 1st.
Yes,
and exactly. So instead they sold him in August to get more money, and if exactly. they would have sold him earlier, then they wouldn't have breached the rules. It's like, okay, well, right. Why didn't you sell him earlier then?
Right, and so that's
like, I get you want to maximize your profits, but like you made this mess because you knew what you were doing. You knew that you could have gotten exactly. under the limit, but you were like, well, we want to hold out for an extra 10 million or whatever it was. Because we want to maximize his value, which sure, but if that's going to be the difference between you or not, like breaking these rules or not, then you got to do what you got to do. I mean,
exactly. And so if you're forced, and now in hindsight, and now that they know everything, basically what they made in that decision is, hey, that 12 million pounds more that we're going to get for Brennan Johnson, that's going to cost us 4 points. Right.
It's like if you had like a sales quota at the end of the month and you held off your last sale because you're like, I want to get a head start on the next quarter or whatever, the next month. And then in retrospect, they're like, oh, well, you didn't hit your quota that month. You're like, oh, well, I actually did have this sale that I could have done, but I wanted to like juice the numbers for the next month. So I held it back. It's like, well, then you missed your quota. Like, I don't really know what to tell you, you know?
Right, right, right. Yeah. Good analogy. Love that. Hashtag sales gang. So that's the other point that they made specifically. So one is unique circumstances with fast promotion. Two is the Brennan Johnson sale that we could have sold up earlier. We held out for more money. And they're sort of in their appeal, they're arguing that like the player sales market, it was sort of interesting. I read some of the diction. It was like, it's unlike any other consumer goods market in the world. Right, like basically, they're saying is like you can't compare the volatility of the player market to like anything else. So putting it on these windows from June 1 to June 1, and measuring it through like regulatory periods doesn't make sense because the value of a player can shift dramatically in 2 weeks. You know, is sort of what their argument is, which. Again, I agree with you. I think they knew at that time. It's all they did is they were like, oh, let's not worry about it. Like, we won't get docked points. Like, no one would ever do that.
And now they get docked, and I was like, well, there's all these things we could have done to get under the gun here, but we didn't do them because it's not fair.
Right.
Basically, is what they're saying.
Yeah, it's a classic. Yeah, they're just kind of just like shoehorning their problems a little bit further out. So I don't know. I think those three teams are going to go down, the three new promoted teams. But now I think what I don't like, and this is now against kind of the ESR committee and the Premier League, is like, I don't love that, like looking at the landscape of the relegation fight, I don't love not knowing or knowing that like anyone's point totals can actually like be changed.
Yeah, you it's know, insane.
I don't like that. Maybe I'm gonna watch a fixture. Like I watched that fixture between Nottingham Forest and Luton, and I was like, okay, Forest got a point away, right? Last weekend, Forest got a point away. That's not a great result, but like that's okay. As long as they didn't lose that game to Luton, they should be fine. And then as a user, like, or as a viewer, like my, you know, my opinion is totally different now, like, because they get docked 4 points 2 days later, right? So it's just hard. I feel like the emotions that I'm going through as a fan, or like when I'm watching the game, are sort of just like, it makes me feel like they can just be kind of like manipulated and changed because this team.
It's kind of like VAR, celebrating a goal and then finding out it didn't count. But
yeah,
the bigger issue for me is, and it's a hard thing, I don't have a solution for it, but it's not just that, oh, well, there could be a points deduction after the fact that totally changes the landscape of previous results and the table and all of that. It's, well, they could be deducted 10 points. They could be deducted 6 points on appeal. It might be 4. We don't know. There's no precedent for any of this. I mean, if Forest got deducted 10 points, they're down. There's probably no coming back from that. If it's 4, okay, we still actually have a pretty good shot. If it's 6, hey, we're not even in the relegation zone right now. And so you don't know when that hit's coming necessarily. I mean, we did give like a time frame back in January when we talked about this, about what the deadlines were for all of this, and there was the potential for Everton that could be after the season for this latest breach with the appeal process and everything. But we don't know if it's 4 points, we don't know if it's 6 points, we don't know if it's 10. I mean, if Everton stay up by 7 points and then get another 6 point deduction, okay, who cares, you know, if it happens after the fact. But if they get deducted 8 points and they go down, and how do you decide that? Like, there's no precedent, right? So it's just people making this shit up as they go, basically. And I mean, it's hundreds of millions of pounds for these clubs. Some of these clubs might never get back up. And if they do, they could be in a spot like Blades or Burnley, where they've never even had a chance of staying up, because it's just, it's crazy. And
I think it ties into what we were talking, you were saying earlier, Chris, is like the rules need to change. And it circles back to that chat we just had about Manchester City, right? It's like Manchester City were one of these teams, bottom half of the Prem, new ownership, and then so quickly and so rapidly were able to pump so much money into the club and rise up quickly, right? And like these sustainability rules, and again, we've talked about this a lot, are that you can't post losses, 3-year losses more than 115 million pounds. So what does that mean? If you are a wealthy new owner and you buy Bournemouth or you buy Forest or Newcastle, I talked about earlier, you can't just say, okay, I have bajillions of dollars as the PIF. Let me buy every best player in the world, put them on Newcastle, pay them obscene money so that Newcastle is great. Because then the Premier League will come back and say, you posted too big of losses, point deduction, or you're going down. So the funny part to think about it, like I do empathize with someone like Forrest, right? In a way, of course, I think, yes, they knew the rules, they fucked up, yes. But then if you kind of zoom out even further and say, well, the rules aren't great for teams being promoted in the last few years. You know, Manchester City was able to do this.
Right. Well, in theory, the idea of saying, we're not going to let teams buy titles is great. But when there's already teams that had a massive head start, it just screws over all the little guys and just makes it even more of an unlevel playing field. When in reality, it should level it out, being like, oh, you can't just have some new oil-rich owner come in at Newcastle and buy every player in the world and win the title the next season. That's great, but when a bunch of these teams already were doing that, and it's completely unfair. I get the idea behind it, but in practice it doesn't work.
Right, it's really hard to do, because if you have any sort of like, you can't post losses, well, the problem is like the revenue of the big clubs is so big already that they have more revenue to begin with. So therefore, they have more cash to play with, right? If you can't post big losses, they're making more revenue. So then if you're a small club, like how do you get to that level? Well, you need to dance a dangerous dance, which is you need to raise your revenue while also continuing to win, while also then continuing to raise your revenue, while also continuing to win, until you get to a place where you're big enough, like like a City or a United or a Liverpool or whomever. And that's just really hard to do when there are already those big fish at the top, because the second they have a couple bad weeks or bad months, they reinvest to make sure they stay at the top. So it's really, really tough. right now.
And then when you're and when you need to you need to sell these guys to meet these rules, and you have to sell Brennan Johnson, where does he go? He goes to Spurs. Right. Where does Pedro Neto go? You know, like, where does, like, there's all these guys that are like these best players at the, you know, the other 14 clubs. And when they have to face these, you know, these restrictions on their revenues, they're going to have to sell these guys to the clubs that they're competing with, who are still going to be able to walk away, like, meeting the requirements. So it's just, I don't know. There has to be a change to it.
I don't know what it is. The more I talk it out, like, I love football. I love the relegation promotion system across the English football pyramid. It does make me realize, like, the self-regulating, sort of self-equalizing mechanism that the draft is in the NFL football, for example, or, you know, American sports, is like kind of genius. Because I mean, the shitty part is there's downsides to that too, of course, right? Like tanking, going for draft picks, rebuilding phases. Like in this model, you can't really have you can never really fully turn off and do a rebuilding phase, because you'll get shit pumped and get relegated and end up slipping too far. So I don't know. It's just different preferences.
Yeah, I mean, last thing on the subject, we don't need to talk about it too much, because we talked a lot about Forest there, but now Leicester are in the same boat, and it's funny because they're currently playing the Championship, but they just got hit essentially with a breach as well. It was announced today, a couple of hours ago, that they are under transfer embargo, and it's expected that if they get promoted, which is very likely that they get promoted, it's not a guarantee, but pretty likely that they'll get promoted next season. They could face a points deduction to start the year, because this probably won't be resolved for them this season. And they are pushing back, and it sounds like they're going to be suing the EFL and the Premier League. They are very avid that they did not break rules, so that one is very up in the air. But we just see more and more of these teams coming into the same spot, with Everton, Forest, now Leicester. I don't know what's going to happen with them, but it's just worth mentioning, because we might be talking about them at the beginning of next season. And right now they're under a transfer embargo. By the way, I was thinking about it. I think transfer embargo might be one of my favorite terms in all of sports. I just love the way that they call it a transfer embargo. I think it's like so formal. I love the word embargo. I was trying to think of like other words that sports like organizations use, and I couldn't come up with anything that I like more than a transfer embargo. So I just wanted to throw that out there as well.
Yeah, fair play. I think the chances are we probably will see Leicester next season in the Prem. Them and Leeds are top of the league, but Ipswich have been making a run lately, and Leicester have been losing some games. So time will tell. I do expect we'll probably see Leeds back in the Prem next season. And then there's a whole host of teams up there at the top of the Championship, which are bigger names and names that we'll be familiar with. So
it is insane that we could have the three promoted teams go right back down and the three relegated teams from last year come right back up. There's a very real world where that happens, which is wild. I don't think that's ever happened before.
Exactly, but which is also definitely related to the sustainability and financial fair play rules kind of discussion that we keep having, right? Like, I don't think that's by surprise. I think, and before we wrap up on the relegation run-in, I do think, again, the three teams will go down. They got promoted. I've said that before. I do want to point out that I think the teams that are going to be, like, right above the relegation zone, I think it's going to be Forest right around there, depending on, you know, any further punishment. Everton are going to be right around there. And so who knows? I mean, they could easily find themselves in the bottom end of the line. And then Brentford's very, very quickly slipping into a relegation dogfight. Brentford don't look good. And I said this, I think, earlier in the year, Chris. I was kind of very quick to say, like, don't look now. But everything's not that rosy with Thomas Frank and Brentford. Like, and we talked about when he went on Sky, right? And he had that kind of tactical interview. Like, they've
He showed all of his cards.
Yeah, like, they've not been good for the last, like, 3 months.
No, the one thing I will say with Brentford, though, is they are getting Brian Mbeumo back. He was just on the bench last game for the first time. He will probably be in the mix for the rest of the season, and he was their best player for the first half before he got hurt. So I think that makes a huge difference for them down the stretch.
Right, but they got Ivan Toney back, and they still are losing games like crazy. They lost four out of their last five.
Well, he didn't play for 6 months. I mean, anyone that expected him to come back and just be a goal-scoring machine. I know he scored in his first game back, but I think he's got 2 goals total. I think they need Mbeumo even more. Like, those two together are very dangerous. I don't think they're going to get relegated. I do think that it's going to be a little dicey for them down the home stretch, but I would expect it to be Everton or Forest if it's not Luton.
I just think Brentford's going to find themselves in a little bit of trouble because they're conceding so many goals. They've been so solid defensively since getting promoted, and they're not solid defensively. The only two teams who have conceded more goals in the Premier League this season, or sorry, three teams, are Luton, Burnley, and Blades, right? So they are 17th in a goals conceded category, which isn't good. And then I think, Chris, we were saying earlier, if there's one team that it kind of would charm us into staying up, I think I agree. I think Luton, it would be, you know, if there's some weird financial fair play ruling that sends Everton or Forest into the relegation zone, and then we see Luton stay up, like, that would be a little heartwarming. They've been a delight in the Premier League this season.
They're definitely, out of all the teams we've mentioned, from 15 to 20 right now, Luton are the team I'd want to watch the most, easily. They are very, very entertaining, and we have talked about that. A lot of credit to Rob Edwards. They score a ton of goals. They go for it every match, no matter who they're playing. Like, that's one team that if I see it's a standalone match and Luton's playing, I'm like, okay, well, this will be fun. I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen. It's not going to be nil-nil. There's going to be goals. They're not going to be sitting back and inviting pressure all games. So I really like watching them. I'd love to see them stay up. It's an amazing story. Everton can go down. That's fine with me.
Yeah, very handsome guy too, Rob Edwards.
Yeah, I think probably the most handsome in the Premier League. If we were ranking them, I think he's probably number one right now.
Who would you say is two?
Ooh.
Ange?
I was going to say Sean Dyche. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm really not sure. I guess it depends on your taste.
Yeah, I think you're probably like in a battle between Vincent Kompany or Marco Silva. Sorry, I'm going
Marco Silva's now. Not bad.
Vincent Kompany, Marco Silva, or Mikel Arteta.
Arteta's up there. I think those are all probably pretty solid picks.
Right. We'll have a manager pageant on a future pod.
I think it's one, and that, yeah, we got to get Marth on here. We can rank them with her. I think she'd love that. Yeah. It's definitely a one, and then a huge gap, and then there's a bunch of guys behind them. I think Rod Edwards is head and shoulders ahead of the rest. But
yeah, absolute man rocket. He's top of the list for sure.
Yeah. All right. You want to talk a little FPL?
Yeah, I think the only thing I want to touch on with FPL is actually less player specific. Going into the last 9-10 weeks of the season, a lot of people are. FPL has been crazy. A lot of people free hit last week, and then people are playing their wild cards going into the last couple weeks of the season. Any players, I'd just say game week 34 and game week 37 look like they're going to be the two popular doubles. And so keeping in mind that when you play a wild card, you're going to want to have flexibility to get players in for both 34 and 37 are going to be the big double game weeks. There are a few teams that we already know are going to have double game weeks. I just head to the FPL site to figure out who. I know Chelsea is going to probably double in both, and so a lot of people really liking Cole Palmer, Malo Gusto. The other thing to note with FPL, Chris, is they just announced that they're going to have a new game coming out next week, which is, I assume, like a daily fantasy game on the FPL site. Which, I guess, I'm curious on your thoughts on this. Like, I feel like there's a better version. We just talked about how the rules for sustainability needs to change. I feel like there's a better way that could get mass audience adoption in the U.S. The FPL could be played. I think the deterrent for a lot of people is it's total points, so you're playing, like, you made the bracket analogy, which I'd love to hear you kind of explain again, but last night when we were talking. But the other, I just think a lot of fans become disillusioned with the game because it's game week 32, it's game week 30. I maybe didn't pay attention for 1 or 2 weeks earlier in the season. And it's just an absolute marathon to really monitor your team and pay attention for 38 game weeks. I mean, I love it because I'm a sicko, and you love it because you're a sicko, and our friends love it because we're sickos. But I can understand for the casual fan, it's daunting to pay attention to FPL for that long and that consistently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what this new thing's going to be. I don't really care, honestly. I think the biggest issue for something like Fantasy Premier League is that it is a longer commitment. I mean, I was talking about it with you. Like, I think the mini leagues are really fun. I don't care about my overall rank, really. I mean, if I was in like the top 1,000, that'd be awesome, or I guess, but it doesn't really matter to me at all. Like, I'm competing against millions of people that I will never talk to or meet or whatever. So it just doesn't really appeal to me. I think the other issue is, I think we're seeing it more with fantasy football in the NFL over the last couple of years as sports gambling becomes legalized in the States. That's just more appealing to a lot of people. And you can just take it game by game, week by week, do what you want with it. I think fantasy football is still popular in the U.S., but it's definitely dying a little bit slowly. And I know that gambling is already legal in the U.K. I think more people are going to be interested in doing that than doing a free thing for a full season with no financial benefit, really. So that's kind of where I lie in it. I think our mini league is very fun and competitive, and I like doing that because we can talk shit to each other and we have a table and we can see how everyone's doing all season long. And there's a lot more strategy involved going head to head than there is going on and reading 20 people's Twitter accounts about the best possible 11 for this week, and they all have the exact same one, and like, that just doesn't really appeal to me. I'm not sure if I'm alone in that or if that's, you know, a lot of people agree when it comes to fantasy for that, but those are my big thoughts with it. If we didn't have our mini league, it wouldn't really be a big thing for me.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. There's a unique element with Fantasy Premier League, and if you don't play and you're listening to the pod, you're like, what are these guys talking about? Basically, like, you at the beginning of a Fantasy Premier League season, you pick a team, you have a set budget of £100 million, every player costs a certain budget, and then you pick a roster, and then throughout the season, you make transfers to that roster. You have a set limit. You can't make unlimited. You have a limited number of transfers you can make, and you edit your team throughout the season to try and score the optimal amount of points. So in theory, Chris and I, we could both be playing Fantasy Premier League, and we could have the same team, right? We could start with the same team, make the same transfers, etc. It's just different than the US, where if you play fantasy football, there's usually like a draft night. You draft all these players. You can make trades, you know, so on and so forth. There's a bunch of different fantasy games. I know that, like spin-off, daily fantasy, all that stuff. I wonder if the FPL app makes a shift as there's so much adoption, or if they get more adoption to kind of create communities within the app or community games. Because I agree with you, that's like the most fun. That's the only reason I play fantasy football. It's not because I don't really follow American football like that closely, but it's fun to play with our buddies from college, right?
Yeah, I could just sit down and watch all the game. I mean, I do follow the NFL right. very closely, but if it wasn't for my friends doing a fantasy league, I wouldn't just join a random one with strangers because I don't really care right. about it that much.
Right. So it's like, I wonder if they will move, the FPL app will move away from this like overall rank, because they did that years ago when they first started it, right? Like, who can score the most points, and there's 300,000 players. Now there's tens of millions of players, and it's sort of silly. Right. So but our mini league is a lot of fun. So shout out to the Ridgeway Fantasy Premier League. Commissioner Marth already got a shout out. And we have a two league promotion and relegation system, a championship and a playoff. So I was down in the championship or down in the relegation zone a little bit. But I've won a couple games. So knock on wood, hopefully I can stay up towards the top of the table. So pretty close to you, Chris, actually, right now.
Yeah, you're a little ways behind me still. I'm pushing for top four, but yeah, I mean, I guess you're not in the relegation battle anymore. So congrats, pat yourself on the back there. Yeah, no problem. Let's do trivia.
Let's do it.
Okay, I've got a fairly interesting one today. I think it's not the craziest thing, but I think it will spark some good discussion. It's going to be something where I'm going to give you 60 seconds. And you're going to have unlimited guesses. It's not complicated at all. So I think there's a good chance. I don't think you're going to get all of them because there's a couple surprises on here, but I think you'll probably end up getting over half. I would be surprised if you didn't. So, all right. I'm going to start here in a second. I want to say that all these players have played at least 1,000 minutes this season. So, you know, 11, 12 plus like full matches. So they've probably played at least about half their games or more, I would say. Okay. The list is 10 players, and it's going to be the 10 players with the highest expected goals so far per 90 minutes in the Premier League. XG per 90.
XG per 90.
Yep.
And they've all played at least 12 games?
They've all played at least 1,000 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Timer starts now.
Erling Haaland.
Yep.
Darwin Nunez.
Correct.
Ollie Watkins.
Correct. That's three.
Heung-min Son.
No.
Rasmus Højlund.
Nope.
Interesting. Callum Wilson.
No.
Alexander Isak.
Yes.
How about Carlton Morris?
No. You have 20 seconds left. You have four.
Bukayo Saka?
No.
Kai Havertz?
No.
Gabriel Jesus?
No.
How about Eddie Nketiah?
No. Five seconds.
Julian Alvarez? Timo Werner?
No. Timo Werner. Not 1,000 minutes. All right, that's time. Honestly, not great. I thought you would have done better. I don't want to sugarcoat it. There's a few on here that you definitely should have gotten. So there's a couple that are tough, but
can I clarify? It's expected. It's XG per 90, and they've played at least 1,000 minutes, right? So I guess my qualifier: are we talking like a bunch of teams from the top end of the table, from high XG teams, or are we talking strikers from lower end teams that get a lot of chances? Or that they get an occasional chance.
It's a little bit of both. Let me check. There's no more than one player per each team in the top 10.
There's no more than one player per each team.
Yeah.
Okay. So how about?
So Haaland was one. Haaland was number one. Nunez was number two.
Dominic Solanke is probably on there then.
He is.
Okay. Nicholas Jackson is probably on there then too.
He's number three.
It's hard. Some of these teams.
So here's really it's Haaland one, Nunez two, Jackson three, Isak four, okay. Solanke is seven, and Watkins is 10. So you're missing 5, 6, 8, and 9.
I know Calvert-Lewin's got a bunch of XG. This season
he is number eight.
How about Muniz at Fulham, who's been scoring a bunch of goals?
He's number 11. He's actually just under 1,000 minutes as well, but he's number 11 on the list.
Is there a Brighton striker like either Danny Welbeck or Ian Ferguson?
No, I'll just give you the teams left. There's only three people left. It's Spurs, Forest, and Liverpool.
Oh, Richarlison.
Oh, there is actually. Sorry, there are two Liverpool players. I misspoke there at the end.
Salah's
number nine. Richarlison's number five. Number six is the only one you're missing from Forest.
Awani or Alanga?
No, Wood? This was the one that I. Yeah, Chris Wood. He was the one I was pretty sure you wouldn't get. I thought Calvert-Lewin was going to be a tough one too, at least during the 60 seconds. Okay, so those are the guys: Haaland, Nunez, Jackson, Isak, Richarlison, Chris Wood, Solanke, Calvert-Lewin, Salah, Ali Watkins. Out of those,
I was sort of paralyzed because I didn't know whether to go. And I guess this is my miss: from an XG standpoint, I don't know. I didn't know if we were gonna have like. Like, because Bukayo Saka, for example, has more goals this season than Chris Wood, right? But he has less XG per 90 because he doesn't get as many quality chances. So it's sort of interesting. You can't think as straightforward as, like, goal scoring. You kind of have to think like who it's going to all be center forwards.
Pretty much. Salah's the only one that. Yeah, Salah's the only one on the list that isn't like a number nine. Yeah. I guess Richarlison varies a little bit, but he's mostly been a central forward. So here's the other question I have as a follow up then. Okay. Out of the 10 guys, five of them have overperformed their XG. So they have more goals per 90 than they have XG per 90. And five have underperformed. So out of those 10 guys, do you think you can name the ones that have overperformed their XG?
Yes, I'm sure I can. So read me the list again, and I'll tell you who.
So we can just go one by one, and you can say whether you think they over or underperformed.
All right,
there's five of them.
Right.
Five on each side. Haaland, over or underperformed?
Underperformed his XG.
Correct. So he has 0.83 XG per 90, 0.7 goals. Darwin Nunez, over or underperformed?
Under.
Correct. 0.73 XG, 0.57 goals. Nicholas Jackson.
Under as well.
Correct. 0.62 XG, 0.45 goals per 90. Alexander Isak.
It's an interesting one. I'm going to say over.
Yeah. 0.6 XG per 90, 0.64. So barely overperformed. So right now you have three under, one over with six guys left. Richarlison is next.
He's going to be close. I think out of the list remaining, I think it could be Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin, who are the underperformers. But I also think Solanke has a lot of chances. I'm going to say Richarlison is an underperformer, but it's going to be close.
He is slightly overperforming, 0.58 XG, 0.66 goals per 90. So the rest of the list, you have three under.
So I know Calvert-Lewin's underperforming.
Three over and two under.
I know
Calvert-Lewin is underperforming by far the most.
Yeah, he's awful.
He has
been awful.
0.2 expected goals, or 0.52, excuse me, expected goals per 90, 0.17 goals per 90.
Brutal.
Massively underperforming.
So, and then who else is on the list? It's Salah.
Salah, Watkins, Chris Wood, and Dominic Solanke. One of those guys is underperforming.
I'm going to say Salah because of the penalty XG. He's underperforming.
No. So actually, this is non-penalty XG. But
oh, what the hell?
That makes no difference.
Not clarified in the question. Bad trivia.
You didn't guess. You guessed like no penalty takers besides Saka. He doesn't actually even really take that many. Okay, so the other underperformer is Solanke, barely.
Damn.
0.52 XG, 0.5 goals. So he's very close, almost right in line. Chris Wood is actually the biggest overperformer. Funny enough.
Hell yeah, Chris. Let's go.
And then Watkins, slightly overperforming. Salah, slightly overperforming.
Damn.
Yeah.
Good trivia.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. A couple other names like below that you had guessed. So the rest of the list below that is Munez, who is well overperforming, Gakpo underperforming, Trossard over, Maupay under, Adebayo well overperforming, Elijah Adebayo, and Mbeumo, Jesus, Diaz, Taiwo, and Hoyland. That rounds out the top 20. So,
yeah, well, I'm not proud of the performance. I will.
It's not terrible, but like not guess Salah is tough.
I will appeal to the council for the lack of non-penalty actually being communicated.
Oh my god, I almost didn't even say that at the end because I knew you were going to make like a bullshit excuse about that. It had nothing to do with your performance.
I don't know.
Oh, non-penalty XG, but you didn't guess Mo Salah, who takes penalties.
Yeah, I mean, just saying, it didn't, you know.
No.
The question wasn't clear.
Oh my god, you would have guessed Cole Palmer like first.
All right. So Chris, what do you think about the games next weekend? Hit me with your picks.
That's disgusting. That's just ridiculous how you're doing that. Okay, so we are recording this on Friday, March 22nd. I imagine most people will probably be listening to the weekend after that. So these fixtures are about a week out. They start on March 30th. The Saturday fixture I have on here is Spurs at home against Luton. Big implications in this one, which is why I picked it. Spurs are currently in fifth, fighting to get into a Champions League place. Luton, obviously, we spoke about needing results down the stretch. So who do you like in this one, Spurs against Luton?
Spurs, and it's going to be a shit pumping. I like 4-0 Spurs.
really. This feels like it has goals in it. I will say that. I mean, Luton, like I said, 17 straight games they've scored. Spurs, not the greatest defense out there. They've conceded more than a lot of teams towards the top of the table. I do think they're going to win. I'm going to say 3-2 Spurs.
Okay, fair play. I'll amend mine to 4-1 after that stat, 17 games in a row, 4-1.
Wow, okay, I guess. Thought the ink was dry there. Next one we have is going to be Sunday morning, Liverpool at home against Brighton.
Yeah, I think after the international break, we're going to see a healthy Mo Salah. I also think Liverpool kind of pumps Brighton a little bit. There's some weird stuff coming out of Brighton's camp right now with De Zerbi and maybe not wanting to stay next season and him, he might be leaving. I don't know, just weird. Hearing some weird Brighton stuff. The stock's definitely fallen after Brighton and Brentford this season, who were kind of big darlings last season. So I'm going to go Liverpool 3-1.
It does feel a little weird at Brighton right now, but they are in eighth place with the game in hand. So it's not like the sky is falling. They're still getting decent results. They've also had some injury troubles this season. Liverpool, though, are in must-win mode. This is a big weekend for them. They don't want to lose any ground, especially the next match we're going to talk about is the other two teams in the title race. So Liverpool need a result. They're going to get it. They're going to win 2-0.
Nice. So we both got wins. And then last fixture, City, Manchester City against Arsenal, Chris. How do you call this one?
This is a tough one to call. I'll say it. City are at home. They just, like I said, came off that draw with Liverpool. Let's go back and I'm trying to think. Do we remember exactly what the result was the last time these teams met at the Emirates?
At the Emirates?
Do you know?
I'm pretty sure. I think City won. It was back half of last season, and it like sealed it.
Well, right? No, it was this season is what I'm saying.
You're saying the reverse fixture.
The reverse fixture, yeah, this season. It was when Arsenal played the Emirates. It was in October. I have it pulled up right now. Do you know the result?
Yeah, it was Arsenal won, right? Like it was
1-0.
After they had already beaten them in the Community Shield too.
1-0, Martinelli winner in the 86th minute. So Arsenal play City very well. They normally show up. This one has a draw written on it for me, and I think it'll be a little bit cagey. I'll say 1-1. And if that's the result and Liverpool beat Brighton, whew, we really have a race on our hands. That will be interesting. That will get Liverpool to the top. They'd be 2 points clear of Arsenal and 3 points clear of City if that were the case. So I'm going to say 1-1. What do you think?
I'm going to say 1-0 City.
Okay.
Just because I feel like, again, Pep is going to – what did you describe Pep's autobiography as earlier?
The nature of Pep.
The nature of Pep. Given the nature of Pep, I think he's going to be extra revved up to kind of squash Arteta in this one. And they always match up and sort of play each other similar. I just feel like the last couple of fixtures have been very tight. Like you said, playing to either a draw or 1-0 wins. So I think City Edge just went out purely because they're at home.
Okay. I don't hate it. I think it will be a good match. There's going to be a lot of anticipation for that one. I think we had the match of the season in the last game week, and this might be the new match of the season until the next one, right? So they're going to be hyping this one up a lot. I'm looking forward to that. Anything else you got in your mind?
Nah, mate. I think we really got into the finances. We looked at the top and the bottom of the table. We did a quick check-in on the Fantasy Premier League landscape. Had some questionable trivia, and then obviously chatted about the weekend to come. It's definitely been a bit of a slower time from a Premier League standpoint, but I'm pumped for things to ramp back up as we get into April.
Yeah, definitely. Questionable guesses on the trivia. Great trivia. Mm-hmm. But I think, good pod.
Yep. As always, gang, thanks for listening. Just Goes to Show.
All right, everybody, see you, and thanks, guys.